everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And today we will be talking about seitan. I have with me Sky Michael Conroy, who began his journey as a vegan chef as a hobby, but he evolved as he studied the culinary arts in depth. And in 2014, he received the plant-based professional certificate of completion from Rooksby Cooking School, taught by Chef Sarno. And for more information about Guy Michael Conroy after this podcast, I really recommend visiting his website, thegentlechef.com. Welcome to It's All About Food, Guy.
Hi there. How you doing?
Hi. Great. So we're going to talk about your new book, Crafting Seitan, Creating Homemade Plant-Based Meats.
Yep.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book.
Thank you. Yeah, they did a really good job with it. I'm very pleased.
Yeah. And before we dig into it, I just wanted to talk a little bit about more about you and your history. And what I read on your website is that you became vegan in 2010. And since that time, you have churned out so many cookbooks.
I have, right.
So prolific.
Considering it started as a hobby, yeah. Yeah, I just, I think back in 2010, when I became vegan, the options, commercial options out there, the foods, I didn't find them very satisfying, because I always considered myself a gourmet foodie. And I thought the replacements were not very good. So I've always been one of those people that needs to figure out how to make things for myself. So that's kind of how I got into it. I just started exploring, experimenting with the different ingredients and trying to see if I could replicate some of the commercial products and make them better for myself. So yeah, it kind of took from there. Yeah.
The world has changed quite a bit with respect to vegan products over the decades. I think the last 10 years have really exploded in terms of vegan products. Is that a good thing? I'm not going to talk about that today, but what I want to say,
it is good. Yeah,
it is good.
But it's hard for me to keep up now because these really expert scientists are coming out with these products that are pretty amazing. So,
well, the question to me is, do we really want scientists creating our food?
That's true. That's very true.
And that's why I appreciate you creating a book like you have, in addition to your others. So for people that do want to get into these meatier dishes, they can do so with simple ingredients.
Simpler ingredients, right.
Yeah.
Now, I will admit, I do explore into some of the modernist ingredients in my other cookbooks. Like
something for everybody.
Something for everybody. When I'm doing the non-dairy, or when I'm trying to replicate eggs, or when I'm getting into the gluten-free meat analogs, I have to explore a little further.
Sure.
But I try to keep everything as natural as possible and avoid the artificial. So, or things that have funky names that you can't pronounce, you know, so I try to avoid that.
Yeah. It's amusing to me because I became vegan in 1988. And
oh, wow.
When I hear people talk about how there weren't a lot of alternatives when they became vegan, and I'm thinking, well, you should have been here 30 years ago.
Yeah, the Loma Linda products. Yeah, we're about it.
Right. We really needed to get creative.
Right.
But anyway, it's a good time to go vegan, and everybody needs to go vegan today.
Absolutely.
I'm here to make vegans. Crafting Seitan. This book goes into every little bitty detail about making seitan. And I was reading it in the beginning and thinking, oh, but what about this? And I wonder about this. And then like a couple of paragraphs later, there you are explaining what I was thinking about in my head.
Right. I try to think ahead for the reader, right? So all the questions are answered. And let me tell you, this work started in 2014. And this was based off a workbook that I did and published in 2014 called Seitan and Beyond. So I've had 6 years to really work on these recipes because I started writing this cookbook last year. So it's 6 years of like tinkering with the recipes and upgrading them and really thinking about how I wanted to present the techniques. And back then also, I wasn't using a pressure cooker. People weren't using the Instant Pot. And so that became really popular and people were sort of asking me, how do I cook this in an Instant Pot? So that got included also.
Now you talk about the Instant Pot in your book and you talk about different ways of making seitan. And sometimes you say pressure cooking is a good thing to do, and other times you say it's not the best thing to do.
I find it, it's really, really good for things that are wrapped that you want to keep. Like I used to have to wrap things in foil to keep the liquid out. It's really good for that because oven baking foil wrapped seitan can cause bursting of the package sometimes because the steam builds up inside. When you're using a pressure cooker, the pressure in the pressure cooker kind of equalizes the outside and the inside, so there's no bursting of the wrapper. So I use it for that purpose only. I don't put unwrapped seitan in a pressure cooker because it forces too much liquid into it too quickly. So yeah, it works for some purposes, and other purposes I don't use it.
I probably should have started this at the beginning, but
right.
First of all, making seitan, there's a lot to cover.
Yeah.
Making seitan. Seitan is gluten from wheat. And you definitely clarify in the beginning that if you have any kind of wheat intolerance, celiac disease, this book is not for you.
Right.
And then I would direct you, if you're one of those people, to your website where you have gluten-free. You have a
gluten-free,
whole
free right.
book on gluten-free recipes. So something for everyone.
Tough.
What?
That was a tough one to write.
Yeah, a lot of discoveries there, I bet.
Oh my goodness. I can't even believe I did that. Yeah.
But how much fun is it to discover all the things that you can do with so many different ingredients?
It really is. And my best friend Louise, okay, here's the funny story about Louise. I consider her my best friend. She lives in Canada. We met on Facebook. We've never met in person. We've never even talked on the telephone. And we do everything from Facebook Messenger, and she's sort of my sous chef. So she and I just constantly every day talking back and forth, and we work on recipes and get ideas from each other. And so she helps beta test all my recipes. Sometimes she'll put in ideas like she's really good with dessert. So when I go off onto other areas like baking and dessert, she's kind of my confidant with that because I'm not very good with those things. I'm still learning. So, but I'm sort of the expert with the seitan. So yeah.
Well, it's nice to be an expert in something. And you know, we can't do it all.
Right. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm learning baking right now and I really feel like a beginner. So yeah.
I'm having
a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll come up to speed very soon. Well, it's like in our house, both of us cook, and Gary, when we make dinners or parties, he usually sticks to the savory stuff, seitan, the meat analogs, or the hearty stuff and the savory sauces. He's the saucier, and I consider myself the pastry chef. You know, I make the breads and the desserts. And
I would get along with you guys great. Yeah, I love all that stuff. Yeah, I love all that French background and cooking. Yeah,
c'est très important, la cuisine française. Yes, and making it the French cuisine vegan is one of my things.
It is. And trying to make it somewhat healthy too. It's like,
exactly.
I mean, let me tell you, I put on the pounds when I start working with these recipes, you know, and I'm testing everything because I have to eat it, you know,
exactly.
So I don't want to waste it. So yeah, I really started putting on some weight. So kind of.
Well, I think one of the responsibilities of a chef, a professional chef, should be to try and make traditional recipes, not only vegan, but healthier.
Healthier. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Those two things. I think that's my opinion. Okay.
I agree.
A million years ago, when I was trying to make my first seitan, I used regular flour and I went through the process of rinsing it.
The washing the flour. Yeah.
Washing the starch away. And so what you do is you take flour, you add water to it, you stir it around, and then you remove the cloudy water, which is the starch, and you keep doing that.
Right.
And then in the end, you have the gluten. And I remember the first time I did it, I had like a postage stamp of gluten. There was like nothing left.
Right. Yeah. Until you learn that bread flour works a little better than all-purpose flour, or yeah, that you rinsed it too much, or you didn't let it set long enough. But washing the flour is very laborious. But you know what? There's whole communities on social media that are into that specific form of seitan. So, and in my first book, Seitan and Beyond, I had that in there, but I didn't really have anything I didn't go beyond that, like what to do with the washed gluten once, other than simmer it in broth. So yeah, so I use Vital Wheat Gluten, so kind of cuts that whole step. But yeah, there's a whole science behind doing it, the wash flour.
Well, there's something meditative about it. And also, you mentioned in your book the process of preparing food, not just enjoying eating it.
Right, exactly.
And this is really
the aromas. Yeah, it's the aromas and putting your own kind of magic into it stuff, like, you know, especially when I create the simmering broths, I like to do things from scratch because you get that, the aromas in the kitchen, and there's something about the flavor of it is so much better than just something from a powder mix or from a jar, you know. Yeah,
like I said before, I was telling you I live in New York City and I'm in an apartment building, and a number of people have commented over the years that we've lived here that the hall always smells good when they're coming near our apartment.
Yeah, my exhaust vent from my kitchen, I'm sure it smells pretty good outside all the time too, because I've always got, and especially now because I've always got bread baking. So that's fun.
I haven't made seitan in a while. I don't do well with wheat, so I don't eat a lot. And I found that I do better with organic wheat. So it was tough finding organic gluten flour, but I found it.
Pricier too. Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's a little bit pricier.
It's really pricier. But I plan on making some of your recipes. I haven't done it yet. I will admit that they are time consuming.
Some of them, well, they may appear that way.
Okay.
And if you're getting into things like making salami, because you have to make the little white mince that goes in this to replicate the fat. You have to do that first, and you have to steam that, and you have to mince it up, and you have to make the other dough for the darker portion, and then mix it all together. Yeah, but once you get the hang of it, I mean, I can make shredded chicken. I can get it in the pressure cooker within 7 to 10 minutes.
Yeah,
it's in the pressure cooker cooking.
I am all about making things that appear complicated, learning how to do them, and then they become second nature.
That's the thing. That's it. And I do it by memory now. You know, a lot of my recipes, I just make it so often, I don't even look at my cookbook. And I do not recommend this to people, but as far as measurements, you get to the point where you're so used to doing it, you kind of eyeball things. But when people are starting off with recipes, it really is a science. So they really do need to measure accurately.
Yeah.
Until they get the real feel for it. Yeah.
Well, especially something like this.
Right. Well, exactly. Because this is very much like a science, like baking. You can't just kind of wing it. I include a measurements for certain things like the gluten, and you want to measure the water, and when it gets down to seasonings and stuff, it's more teaspoons and tablespoons, you know. I don't get down to grams, but definitely with the and also with the tofu, because I make a lot of meat analogs where I combine gluten and tofu together, so like for the chicken, shredded chicken. So you really want to be accurate with things.
Okay, so you brought up adding in tofu with your gluten
combinations
mix,
right?
And I want to ask you, you have a basic, what you call chicken recipe. You spell it C-H-I-K-U-N.
Right. I have a lot of fun with the misspellings. Yeah.
And then you have a beef, basic beef recipe, B-E-A-F, and then a basic pork recipe, and I was looking at the differences, and I'm just wondering how they came about. So some have a little more gluten to tofu ratio, and what were you looking for in each of these recipes?
Well, with the chicken, I wanted to replicate, and this took a long time to figure out, I wanted to get that pulled shredded texture, and it kind of happened by accident because I was using the gluten and tofu combination. And one day I thought I had made a mistake. I had baked a roast and I unwrapped and I thought, oh, this isn't going to work. And I went to bend it because I was going to discard it. And I bent it and it pulled apart, like shredded. And I thought, oh my goodness, wait, I just discovered something here. So that's kind of how I came into that. It took a long time to figure out that the best way to process it was in a food processor, because you need to get it to the point where it starts to warm up a little bit as it's processing, and it turns into kind of almost like a taffy texture. And the more you get it like that, the better it's going to be after it cooks, as far as like having that stringy pulled texture. So it was a lot of trial and error. And I have to admit, it was a lot of help from my people in my cooking group on Facebook, because a lot of people were making things. And it's like with the pressure cooker, I was not really into that, but a lot of people had started using it. They were giving me tips about, oh, I did your recipe using the pressure cooker. So I'm learning from my readers as much as I'm teaching them. So it just kind of all comes together over a period of time. So the recipes really have evolved since I first came out in 2014, because I start to figure out what's hit and miss. Because sometimes it would be a hit, and other times it would be a miss. And it took a while to figure out why it was doing that. So it's just, yeah, it's trial and error.
You had a Thomas Edison moment with seitan.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is, it's not technically seitan because we're including the tofu in it. Seitan is really just gluten, but we kind of fudge it a little bit, you know. It's
like, okay, are we going to give it a new name, like a Conroy meat or something?
Chicken. That's why I just call it chicken. Yeah. So it was also differentiating the different flavors of meat, because it had been so long since I had actually eaten meat. And I'm like, okay, I'm trying to remember what characteristics make pork different from chicken, because they can appear kind of similar. You know, I started using different ingredients to get umami flavors to replicate, because obviously we're not using the animal and there's no animal fat in it. So we want to create something that's going to make differentiate between the different types, like the chicken, the beef, and the pork. So that was a little tricky trying to figure that out. So that took time.
But, and you use mushroom powder in some of your mixes.
Is
there a mushroom powder you like?
I use Hoosier Hill Farms, but there's a lot of people will, grind their own dried porcini mushrooms or portobello mushrooms.
So
I use porcini for the beef, technically, because it's a little dark than the portobello, and I use the portobello for the pork.
Okay. Different mushrooms for your different
right,
mixes.
Different colors. Right. A lot of, in the beginning, I was using Gravy Master, which is kind of a caramelized liquid that you can add to gravies to give it depth of color. And I was kind of relying on that to add the depth of color to like the beef and things like that. And I still do that sometimes, but I'm relying more on the mushroom powder to do that.
Good. Yeah. I like mushroom powder better than
Well, and it adds so much flavor too.
You know. Mushrooms are so good for us.
Right. Absolutely. I totally love mushrooms.
Yeah. Very good. So the next thing is, there are all these lovely photos in here. And I'm familiar with people who have put cookbooks together, and they have food photographers, and it can be quite a complicated process with the timing of the food and plating it and then photographing it. And then I realized who did the photos, and it was you.
Well, originally when, book publishing company approached me, they said, we will do the photos. We want you to rewrite the book to a certain degree, you know, because we only have so much space we can include. So we had to cut a few recipes here and there from the original manuscript. And they said they were going to do the photos. And then they came back and they said, well, after seeing some of my photos online, they're like, we really would like you to do the photos. And I thought, okay, so it was basically, I didn't have anything to start with, because all my old photos weren't suitable for print. They were very small. So I had to redo everything. So everything photographed for this cookbook was redone last year. And so it was a lot of work. Yeah, I have to say, because like you said, it's not just taking a picture, it's food styling and, you know, and making the dish, you know, and so it was a lot of fun, but it was a lot of work. And I learned a lot at the same time. So,
and this was all during COVID.
So
this was a nice COVID project.
Right. Exactly. I'm kind of a homebody anyway. It's not like, it's not like I had anywhere to go. So
I think the first recipe that I want to make is the brisket.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I come from a Jewish background. I am not religious, everyone. I don't believe in anything. I believe in veganism and healthy food.
There you go.
But I like
and being a good person.
And being a good person. I like traditions. I like the holiday foods. So brisket is a popular one for the Passover. The odd thing is that Passover, you're not supposed to consume wheat, or at least wheat that hasn't been blessed. And I don't want to go into
I'm not sure about all the rules either, but
It's kind of crazy. And I think the better way to go is to celebrate with vegan foods.
Absolutely.
And kind of change up the holiday
a little bit. How can you go wrong with that? I mean,
I can do whatever I want, right?
Right, exactly. And the funny thing, you mentioned this, Louise just made a Jewish brisket using the brisket. So, I mean, I can forward you that recipe.
She
sent it to me yesterday. Yeah, she's the tomato paste and or ketchup and some tomato paste. And her picture turned out really nice.
Oh, great.
So
That's what I'm going to do next. And definitely those, the corned beef and then the sausage.
And I just got done with that. Yeah. Because of St. Patty's Day. So yeah, I just made a nice corned beef brisket the other day and it was really, really good. And it's funny, I made some for my partner and we were eating it. We were like, God, this really, there was a Jewish delicatessen growing up. I'm from Southern California, Jewish delicatessen down the street called Benji's. And I used to love their Reuben sandwiches because they would just shave the corned beef really thin. This is like decades ago. And just pile it high on the rye bread with the sauerkraut and, you know, the Swiss cheese. And so I thought, I really kind of nailed this. I mean, this really reminds me of that. Now, granted, it's been a long time since I've had a real Reuben sandwich, but I thought it was very satisfying. That's what I go for. I try to replicate things that people will miss because a lot of people become vegan for ethical reasons and not because they don't like those foods. They just gave up those foods because for the animals. And that was my primary motivator in all of this. I wanted to capture the flavors and textures of things that people would miss or things that they grew up with in like, you know, family traditions and things for the holidays. So, yep, that was my prime motivator.
You got your training from the Rooksby Cooking School taught by Chef Chad Sarno. What did you get out of that class?
It was a lot of basics on chef training. To be perfectly honest, there was only one seitan recipe that they prepared. And there was absolutely nothing else on meat analogs. It was mostly working with vegetables, how to make your own pasta, working with grains and vegetables, which would be what a lot of vegans would like. But as far as meat analogs or dairy replacements, there wasn't so much any of that. So.
Now, I've made seitan a bunch of times. My partner Gary, he's played with it a lot, and he was doing the roast, wrapping them in the foil like you describe, and tying them with string, and doing some really nice things with them.
Cool.
And we're the kind of people that we like to wrap in parchment paper first, so it's not exposed to the foil, which you mentioned in the book. Thank you. Everything's there.
I didn't mention this. I've had some really creative cooking group members who have even taken like a thin silicone sheet and wrapped it in that and tied it up with kitchen string. Some people have used nana leaves. Don't take my word for it because I've never done this myself to test it, but some people get really creative with how they do things because they don't want it to come in contact with foil. So I'm not as concerned about that for myself. Yeah, parchment is a great option for that.
So texture is really important when it comes to meat analogs, and seitan can be spongy. And you talk about how that happens, how it can be too dry and bready and how it can be spongy and what you need to do to get the texture you want.
Right, absolutely. A lot of the sponginess comes from forcing liquid into the seitan as it's cooking too quickly. So you want to have cooking temperatures, really simmering texture. If you're simmering in a broth is really important. And as I mentioned earlier about when I use a pressure cooker, I always have it wrapped in foil. I don't just put, you know, unwrapped dough in a pressure cooker because you can force the liquid in too quickly and make it spongy. So yeah, it's a lot of it is about cooking temperature and just, you know, having a nice lazy simmer as it's cooking and it absorbs the water perfectly. I also have a really good trick that I use where I use partial baking and then I do simmering. And what that does is it partially cooks the gluten and it creates kind of a skin on the outside to keep the liquid from being forced in too quickly. So then you don't have to worry about the simmering, the cooking temperature as much. You can kind of put in, you get a nice simmer going and it's good to go. So lots of little tricks here and there.
And they're all in this book.
And they're all in this book, right?
Okay. So for some people who I can hear them and they're saying, this is too much trouble and takes too much time. Even though we've already talked about how you practice, you get better at it, it becomes routine. But there are still some people that may want some shortcuts. Have you ever used any commercial seitans in your recipes? Do any of them work? Do you recommend them or not?
You mean commercial seitan as in the chunks that come in the little packet?
Yeah, you buy them in the store.
It's good. I mean, if you're in a hurry and you're making a dish, sure. I mean, why not? But that really isn't what this cookbook is. But this is about making the meat analog yourself. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't really want to. But yeah, of course you could. If you're in a pinch, you know, it's like, and I'm not going to lie, I've had commercial vegan burgers before. And sometimes I get lazy and I get tired of making, because I make everything from scratch, even my own breads, my own condiments, my own breads, my own meat analog, my own cheeses. It gets tiring sometimes.
I'm right there and with you.
With the pandemic, I haven't been to a restaurant since last February. Not this past February, but the last February. So, I mean, we've done some ordering in, but it gets really expensive with DoorDash and all that stuff. So I'm constantly cooking it in the kitchen. So,
yeah,
you get tired sometimes. So, yeah, sometimes, and here I always learn my lesson, I'll tell you, because I'll go and I'll buy things. And there are a few products out there that are decent, but I've almost always will buy something and then I don't like it. And I think I can make this so much better myself. And I ended up wasting all that money and it goes in the rubbish bin, you know. So, yeah, I learned my lesson sometimes the hard way. But the good thing about this is you can make, especially if, you know, it's just you have a small family or you're just by yourself. Sometimes the recipes make a lot. Like if you make a roast, it's kind of a lot to consume within a few days. So, but it freezes really well. So you can make things and then freeze them. And I've gotten into the habit of doing that now. And it's really helpful. I even did that with the brine for the corned beef. There's a lot of brine and I just put it in containers and popped it in the freezer. And I thought, well, this is great. Next time I make it, I've got the brine already made up because the brine is made from all fresh spices. So this way I don't have to dig all the spices out. Next time the brine's ready to go, I just thaw it out and whip up my corned beef and I'm good to go.
I was wondering about that because you talked about simmering broths and brine and how you can reuse them again. Is there is there a lifespan of how many times you would use a broth or a brine?
Well, actually not really, as long as it's still fresh. Here's the thing though with like when you're making the chicken and you're simmering it in like a homemade chicken broth, some of the tofu, the cloudiness from the tofu leaches into the broth a little bit and can kind of make it a little cloudy. So I tend to store it in the fridge and let the sediment kind of settle. And then I'll pour that off if I'm doing something, but usually like maybe twice, two or three times at the most for reusing.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
You also have different recipes for condiments, sauces, spice mixes in here. So
absolutely,
for those of you who like doing it all.
Right. Well, and let me tell you, if you make my mayonnaise, people swear by it. And it's so, I can make the mayonnaise in 5 minutes. I have an immersion blender. I know it by heart. Bing, bang, boom. It's done. And it's better than anything on the market. I guarantee it.
Well, we're right there with you. We have a collection of recipes that we make all the time that are the foundation of everything we use. Right. And so we have our ketchups and our mayonnaise and our yogurts and our jams, and those things just are always made and always there.
Do you make your own yogurt also?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got some going right now. Yeah, make my own yogurt.
I used to make it almond based, and I would soak the almonds and skin the almonds and then make it. And now I'm cashew yogurt's easier, and
yeah,
I just make it from cashews.
Well, see, and the thing, you know, because I do a lot of non-dairy also, so I make the yogurt that which forms the base for my cheeses and also for my butter, mm-hmm. you know, and my sour cream. Yeah, I mean, it works for a lot of different reasons. The other thing I was going to mention about shortcuts, we were talking about simmering broths, and I like to do everything from scratch, except I have a really good bouillon powder, chicken bouillon powder that I make. So it's really, really good. And I use it for flavoring the seitan chicken. So I really like that. It's a really nice shortcut too. If you're in a hurry, you just want to get some big pot of chicken broth going. So that is a shortcut that I like to take.
Mm-hmm. And it's all here.
Yep.
All right. So let's just jump a little bit around. I saw on your website that you're also a gardener or landscaper. Are you still doing that?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Not professionally, of course, but yeah, we have.
Okay.
Yeah. Not professionally. It's just our own at home. Yeah. We have a couple ponds and have the waterfall features and.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah.
Well, gardening goes with cooking.
Absolutely. It's very meditative too. Yeah. Just get out in nature, and all our bulbs are coming up right now, our daffodils and tulips and hyacinths. And so everything kind of cycles through the season. We're very into the seasons. And so we've got things planted. So everything kind of grows in rotation, and I can't wait to plant my tomatoes, cucumbers and tomatoes every year. So it's like, so we have a fairly big backyard. So we have some room to do all that stuff. And I look forward to that. But landscaping is a lot of fun. My partner's really into it too. So as I'm getting older too, slinging big bags of mulch and stuff like that is a little hard on me. So he's younger, so he's really good at that. He does all the backbreaking stuff now, so I get to enjoy it a little more. Yep.
Okay. This is really a great cookbook. Everything is in here, like all the different cuisines that use meat, which is like everything.
Well, and that's
but you
that's,
really cover a wide range. Yeah.
Right. That's a foundation for everything. And you know, originally I had seafoods in here too, but there was too much material. So
is that the next book?
No, I already have a book out for it. It's called the Gentle Sea Cookbook. So and then I have another textbook called Cook and Let Live that has a lot, how to make your own vegan shrimp and lobster.
And what's the base of those foods, the seafood?
Konjac.
Oh, sure.
Which is used to make, the shirataki noodles.
Yeah.
That's
easy to find, konjac?
You have to order it online.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, here's another thing, you know, with quality, it turns out people were buying konjac online and they were having problems making it. It turns out that it's not just konjac. You have to buy a really good quality konjac because some of them are adulterated. And I had a heck of a time trying to figure out why some people couldn't get the recipe to work. And that's what it was.
And are they all still coming from Japan?
I don't know where the source is necessarily. I use the Now brand. It's glucomannan is the ingredient in the konjac, so you really want to buy glucomannan. That's the base of the seafood. Yeah, it's really fascinating. I mean, if you go to my website, you can find photos of the seafood dishes and stuff too. So
very good.
Yeah, really forms a basis. I really got into sushi making recently, you can make vegan tuna, raw tuna with watermelon. Who knew? So it's really interesting, and I found a really interesting process for making it that's really simple, and it's incredibly realistic looking. But so it's amazing what you can make from plants.
It's amazing. Plants need to get more credit.
I know, right?
Because they're far more amazing and interesting products than tortured animals.
And I'm sure you can agree with me here. There isn't anything that I miss now.
No.
I can make anything except a souffle. I haven't figured out how to make a souffle, but I can live without that, you know, because that relies so much on the structure of eggs to make it. But things like that, an angel food cake. But you can make things that are similar. But
I've made some angel food cakes that are
pretty decent.
Pretty decent. Yeah.
Are you using the aquafaba?
Yeah.
To use it? Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
So, a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of too much sugar for me. Yeah.
I had to cut. Yeah, I found out I was diabetic last October. So I had, so like, and the bad part about that, I was working on kind of like a pastry section for our next cookbook. And I thought, darn it, now I can't use sugar.
Yeah, I love making desserts and I love making pastries and things. And I'm now moving to, it's a process, everybody. And wherever you are on the journey right. is good. But I'm moving towards making the desserts that I love from whole food ingredients. So I'm using date paste and dates rather than sugar. And
it's so rich tasting anyway. Yeah, I love stuff like that. And then I am exploring the alternative sugars like the allulose, the erythritol and stuff.
Yeah.
From the sugar alcohols. But the stuff is so expensive. So yeah, I agree with you. Just making a sorbet out of fresh fruit is all you need. So yeah.
Absolutely. You did mention in the book, one more thing I wanted to ask is that the gluten flour should be 75% protein.
Right.
And is there a way to figure this out other than going to the nutrition panel and doing a little math of protein in grams over the total grams?
No, it'll say on the package.
Because like I didn't see it on my package, but yeah, I guess I got
a... Do you have a specific brand you're using? Yeah, I know Bob's Red Mill has it on the package. So that's my favorite. I can see it already. It's Anthony's, isn't it?
Okay, here we go. I got Anthony's.
It's Anthony's. Yeah, that's my favorite. That's
okay, good. Uh-huh. So I made a mistake because at first I was looking for organic and I noticed that the 4-pound bag was a lot cheaper than the 2-pound bag. So I went for the 4-pound bag and turned out the 4-pound bag was cheaper because it wasn't organic.
It's not organic.
And then I bought the 2-pound organic bag. So I have both. I thought I'd practice with the not organic and go from
there. You go. There you go. Yeah, Anthony's is very good quality. Yeah.
Does it say it's here at least that 75? It's 75%?
I don't know if it says on there, but I can vouch for that one. That's what I use.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I did. I did the math. There's 30 grams.
Wow. I never heard anybody do that.
There's 30 grams in a serving size and 23 grams of protein. So 23 divided by 30 is 76.7%.
Wow. How about that? That's amazing. I never would have thought to do that. Yeah, that's pretty wild.
I have a science and math background, so it comes in handy.
You must have, right. No, that's, good. Yeah, it always has worked well for me. Yeah, I like Anthony's. And it's funny, too, because some people are really sensitive to the flavor of wheat gluten. And to go back at the beginning of our conversation, we were talking about the washed flour, where people are using bread flour. A lot of people like that because it's milder tasting. There's something about the concentrated commercial vital wheat gluten that has a stronger flavor. And some people have a little problem adapting to it, or they never adapt to it. So that's why they like the recipes where I include the tofu because it helps kind of cut the flavor a little bit. But I take great care to heavily season my seitan recipes so that it masks that wheat taste that some people don't care for.
Sure.
So that's kind of an important point. But a lot of people, Anthony's, they seem to like Anthony's vital wheat gluten because it's not as strong tasting as some of the other brands, I guess.
Yeah. So, Anthony's vital wheat gluten, the website is anthonysgoods.com. You could also get it through different distributor sites.
Absolutely.
That I don't want to mention.
and I love everything that they have too. I get their tapioca flour and their nutritional yeast flakes and their the chickpea flour, because I do a lot of stuff with chickpea flour. I love that. Right now I'm making chickpea tofu lately. So
that's
really good. Yeah, it's really good. So
in terms of seasoning the flour, I noticed that you use a little chickpea flour in some of your recipes. And that's another flour that I think is important to season a lot to not have that beany flavor, right?
Right. Chickpea, you're right. It does have a very strong taste to it, but people can substitute it with soy flour. Now, interestingly, though, I if you're making my vegan ham recipe, I use all-purpose flour to cut the gluten. And that's because it gives the ham a certain texture. So it even comes down to the little side ingredients that go into it that help create the textures. And one of my newer cookbooks, I also have a recipe for bologna lunch meat. And I use tapioca flour instead of the chickpea or the all-purpose. So it just depends on what I'm creating. And it just took a lot of experimentation to find these little subtleties that affect texture. But yeah, you're right. I guess that never really occurred to me that, yeah, the chickpea flour is very strong in its aroma.
Well, in your recipes, you're not using a lot, and it's mixed with the other flours. Right, it's like a couple
tablespoons, yeah.
But we'll make like a chickpea flour. I like to say garbanzo bean flour, flatbread, and I'll add a lot of herbs to it and spices.
Yum. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. Okay, the last thing people should know is that you have a Facebook group, The Gentle Chef, on Facebook. And you engage with the people that are there, and there's a lot of great sharing of information. So
I'm on every day. Yep. Check in every day, try to answer questions.
Right.
Been doing this for over 10 years now. Yeah, I've had this cooking group. So so it's very interactive, and people post their successes and they ask questions if they're having problems or, you know, need clarification on the recipes. So I don't think a lot of authors do that, you know, so I think that's kind of cool. So
I think it's cool too.
Yeah.
I'm all into sharing.
And we have a very, what I like about it too, it's a very no drama, don't tolerate drama in our group. And I know there's a lot of like arguing on social media and groups and stuff.
Yes.
And we try to just keep it about the recipes.
Even in the compassionate vegan community, there's drama, right?
Right, right. We try not to get into the, it's all about the cooking. We don't get into the politics of veganism or ingredient bashing. We try not to do that. And, we just all about the cooking. That seems to work pretty well. We've got a pretty good formula.
Very good. Well, Sky Michael Conroy, author of Crafting Seitan, Creating Homemade Plant-Based Meats. Anything you want to add before
No,
we
this
go?
Was a lot of fun. I think we covered a lot already.
And, good.
So that was pretty cool.
Okay,
so,
well, I will be making a few recipes and posting
and
sharing
I'll send you the brisket recipe. I'll email that
definitely.
Over.
Excellent. So
I don't think Louise will mind. Yeah, yeah. And let me know what you make. Did you join the group by any chance?
I did.
Group? Or? You did?
I did.
Oh, yeah. Good. Okay. So we can keep in touch there too. So
okay, very perfect. Good.
Awesome.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much for joining me today on It's All About Food. And
thank
one day, maybe
so
we'll break some bread and some seitan together.
I know, right? Wouldn't that be great? Thank
okay.
you.
Take care. Be well.
You too. Bye-bye.
And there you have it. That was Sky Michael Conroy, author of Crafting Seitan, Creating Homemade Plant-Based Meats. Just wow. Somebody get this guy a restaurant. This guy is so passionate about what he does. I just wish that I could eat more wheat because I would really like to dig into all of these different recipes, but we definitely will. And I have put one person in charge of making some of these recipes, and that is Gary DeMattei.
I'm here. Wow. What a great book. Crafting Seitan.
Crafting Seitan.
One of the three big meat substitutes. The first one being tofu, second one being tempeh, third one being seitan.
And tofu and tempeh are soy-based, so if you've got problems with soy and wheat, we'll talk to you on another day.
Well, there's also a lot of gluten-free things made from mushrooms now. There's a lot of companies that are really starting to up the mushroom game. I just saw on one of the sites that there's this startup that just raised $60 million to make vegan bacon and leather from
Gary's favorite food, mushrooms.
Mushrooms.
Maybe that's why the price of dried mushrooms has skyrocketed since
I
bought mushrooms. I like to buy dry organic mushrooms that I have all the time.
Right.
That I can hydrate at any time. And what I do is I cook a small amount and add it to my food because you know who doesn't like mushrooms.
Sorry.
But when I went to buy them recently, the price had, I think, tripled.
Well, I can understand that because this biotech company called Ecovative Design recently raised $60 million to fund its goal of replacing animal products and eco-damaging materials with mushroom-derived alternatives.
Okay, Gary, would you wear mushroom leather?
Yeah.
You wouldn't eat it, but you'd wear it.
Right, and I'm sure that they're going to process the mushroom out of this mushroom stuff because it's probably going to taste just like bacon. So you know what? I might even eat some of this Ecovative designed mushroom bacon.
That's very exciting.
But as you and I both have said on this program before, why bother?
Yeah, right. Why bother?
Why bother trying to reproduce the taste of flesh?
What he's done in his book is amazing, and the pictures are amazing. But I agree with you. Someone like myself,
I mean,
I'm not interested in eating.
No,
meat,
I love.
But it could be fun on occasion.
I love Seitan, and I love what he's done with this book. The sky's the limit for Sky.
That's right.
I mean, he cooks all day, all night. Have you been to his website?
I know. Now we cook a lot.
This guy cooks.
He really cooks.
He cooks 24/7.
And you have to go to his Facebook group, the Gentle Chef group. It's a private group.
This guy's amazing.
He has to accept you. But there's so much going on there. And there are other people in this group of 20,000 or so that are just as passionate as he is.
I mean, it's just so wonderful to see what this guy's doing, what Sky is doing. Because it's tremendous. And like you said, get this person a restaurant.
Yeah.
He's got more than one book in him. He's got 25, 30 books in him.
Yeah.
I'm really going to enjoy making some of these recipes because I've looked through it and it's very thorough. And I love Seitan, especially when I was transitioning. And you and I both love going to our local Chinese restaurant, our vegan Chinese restaurant, which is closed now. And some of these meat analogs that he has in here, some of these Seitan dishes, I'm waiting to try.
Yeah.
But I know wheat is not your friend.
No, I can't have a lot of it, and it has to be organic.
And I'm telling you, I'm not making it because I know you'll eat it, and then you might get sick. So
I'll be okay.
Oh, okay. We'll see. But anyway, great interview. And some of these recipes are mouthwatering. And if you're transitioning to a plant-based diet, Seitan is your friend. Go into a lot of these restaurants and order Seitan, especially Chinese restaurants, because they do it right.
Oh, yeah. With lots of oil and sugar and salt.
Well, that's what makes it taste great.
That's what makes it taste great.
And that's what you need when you're transitioning off of the animal and want that familiar flavor in your mouth that you think is because you're eating meat, but it's not. It's because you're eating salt, sugar, and oil. That's it.
Yeah.
And a lot of smoky flavors and a lot of really wonderful things called umami. Is that it?
Yeah, that's a word you learned recently.
I learned umami. It from Sky's book here. Well, actually, okay. I learned it before that. But Sky talks about umami in one of the chapters. And that is the flavor of what you just said.
It's the meaty, rich, mushroomy kind of flavor. It's not sweet or sour or salty or bitter.
And that's why nutritional yeast, for me, is...
Mm-hmm. That has umami.
Umami. Mm-hmm. It has this great umami, and he uses nutritional yeast in this. But we were having a discussion the other day about people's, these conspiracy theories, people writing in saying, are you aware that nutritional yeast is...
Has MSG in it.
MSG. And we got into an argument with someone about MSG. MSG is not all that bad, according to people who use MSG. So this is a very touchy subject, but they were talking about how nutritional yeast is really MSG. And of course, we just busted that myth.
Well, MSG has glutamate in it. It's the sodium form of glutamate. It has sodium added to it. That's why it's called monosodium glutamate. It has a sodium added to it. And glutamate occurs naturally in many foods.
Right.
I have a problem with some products that have MSG in it. I get that pressure headache. And someone told me, I have it in my notes somewhere, I should pull it up, but it's not the MSG per se, but it's an additional ingredient that magnifies the flavor potential, the saltiness of the MSG, and that together with the MSG gives you the headache.
So it's not the MSG, right?
By itself.
Right. It's that booster.
Yeah. And that naturally occurring glutamate is okay. The thing is, though, too much of anything isn't good for you. Too much water and you drown, folks.
Right.
Okay. Soy foods, organic soy foods are perfectly fine, but you want to have a varied diet. You don't want to be eating soy foods three meals a day.
Right.
Variety is what's necessary. So you don't want to eat a big bowl of nutritional yeast. It's a flavoring. It's something you sprinkle but on foods.
But it's not MSG.
But it's not. No, it doesn't have the synthetic MSG, right. Monosodium glutamate.
But a lot of people are now trying to exploit this and strike fear into the hearts of those that are transitioning to a plant-based diet, because there's this area of doubt that you walk through when you say, well, I'm going to give up the animal and I'm going to become a vegan and I'm going to go completely plant-based. What foods can I eat that will make me feel like I'm not missing out on anything? Seitan, for me, was one of them. And so is nutritional yeast. But I no longer eat that much seitan. But if somebody came up to me and said, you can no longer have apples, for example, because...
I'm sure somebody said it.
Right. Because, you know, apples contain cyanide in the seeds or something. And I mean, it's almost like folks are looking for things that help people transition off the animal to try and scare them back to eating.
You got it. Yeah. One more thing I wanted to say about nutritional yeast. There are many brands out there today. Back in the old days, I think the only one I could find was Red Star. But they're different. Not all nutritional yeast is the same. And many are fortified. Fortified with vitamins like B12 and folic acid. And our friend Dr. Jill Furman does not recommend consuming nutritional yeast that is fortified. We don't need those extra vitamins added, especially folic acid. B12, there's no known limit to how much B12 you can consume, but still there are other B vitamins that are added to the nutritional yeast. So we recommend getting a nutritional yeast that is not fortified.
Very difficult to find, as we
found out. Difficult to find, and you want it to be non-GMO, not have the nutritional yeast fed on any kind of genetically modified sugars. It's a challenge out there. Those are things to consider when you go for your nutritional yeast. But don't be afraid of it.
No, don't be afraid of it, because it's not going to harm you. For those of you who are wondering what nutritional yeast is, It is a deactivated yeast. So it's not the kind of yeast that you are going to use to rise bread, for example.
And it's not like brewer's yeast, which has the most horrible smell and taste.
Right. It's good stuff if you're trying to transition off of cheese. And you can put nutritional yeast in a lot of things, and it gives it a real umami.
Yeah.
Umami.
Umami. We like to mix nutritional yeast into our salad dressings and some savory sauces, maybe with a nut or seed base, and add a little miso. Which gives you salt, since we don't salt our food, but we like using miso because it adds another dimension of flavor, not just the salt.
Right, and there will be people that will tell you that that's bad for you too. So, as you said, in moderation, all things in moderation, including, as the great Joe Jackson has once said, moderation.
Yeah, I have issues with the word moderation.
Right, that's why I followed it up with
Including moderation.
All things in moderation, including moderation.
Right. Not all things, though. Some things we should never do. And I think eating animals is one of them.
Right.
I don't think eating animals is okay in moderation.
That's a give me.
Because I'm here, everybody. Why?
To make vegans. And another really cool thing that's going on in the plant-based world that you can catch on all of the sites. So I'm not going to list just one site, except ours, because we are not into sensationalism, is that Shake Shack is offering a vegan burger.
No!
Created by Pinky Cole, called the Slutty Vegan.
The
Slutty Vegan.
And are they making vegan shakes? That's what they need
to pair it with. I'm sure they are. On that subject, Oatly is making a soft serve, which is going to be available soon in a lot of soft serve places. So that's pretty cool.
It is cool. I'm waiting for the price of oats to go up now that oat milk and oat milk ice cream is so popular.
It's all going to go.
Everything's going to go up.
And hopefully the little animals will be able to live their lives and grow old. Which was a great book that you had the author of on.
That art book.
Where it shows animals being allowed, farm animals being allowed to grow old. And really, when you think about it, farm animals are not allowed to grow old. Do you have the author of Growing Old on the show?
Issa Leshko.
Right.
Allowed to Grow Old. Beautiful book. That was a couple of years ago, Gary, and I still like to thumb through those photographs.
We forget that farm animals are not allowed to grow
old. Yeah.
They die. They are killed.
They are killed early.
Early.
For lots of reasons. The ones that are raised for meat are killed young for meat as soon as they get fat enough. Because why do they want to keep feeding them? Costs money to feed them. They just want to feed them just enough to get them fat enough to sell them. And then the cows that give milk, when they're not giving enough milk after being made pregnant over and over and over and taking their babies away, when they don't give enough milk, then they're sent to become hamburgers.
Yeah. The book is also by Ann Wilkes Tucker and Jean Bauer. Portraits of Elderly Animals from Farm Sanctuaries.
Mm.
So what else is new?
What else is new? You know, it's very difficult to do as much cooking as we do when the kitchen sink isn't working.
We are without a kitchen sink.
Yeah, we have some plumbing that needs to be taken care of, and we're waiting for our
super who just super, got his shot.
Super just got his COVID shot, and
so
we're
he might be out of commission for a couple of days. So right now we're camping in the sink.
That's right. But we know we have a bathroom sink and a bathtub.
Right.
And we're making full use of all of them.
You would never know that we don't have a sink.
I think we're washing the dishes even better than we were before, because we stopped using the dishwasher a while ago.
Yeah, why was that?
We didn't like
it
the circuit.
We have plumbing issues and we have electrical issues, and we're going to get them all figured out.
All nice, new, and shiny very soon. And then we can cook some more, right?
We can cook a lot more. Yeah, so it's very exciting that a lot of people are investing lots of money in making new versions of things that don't require animals.
It is exciting if it indeed helps to make more vegans.
Yes.
Because I want to see more vegans.
I agree.
I like the idea that people are interested in eating less meat, but I want to see the numbers show that we are killing less.
Yes.
And I don't see that yet.
No.
I think it's time to say goodbye to everybody.
Say goodbye.
Yeah, say goodbye. Everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass, and I'm here with Gary DeMattei.
Crafting Satan, Sky Michael Conroy. Fabulous book. Go out and buy it.
We are the co-founders of the nonprofit Responsible Eating and Living. Visit us at responsibleeatingandliving.com.
You know, that's a great website. If you haven't been to responsibleeatingandliving.com in a while, check it out. It's beautiful. I was just there just now. It's absolutely gorgeous.
You know, if you've been listening and you like this show, could you rate us wherever you're listening on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, or let people know about what we're doing here? In the meanwhile, everybody,
have a delicious week.